If your business needs a new application, then developers will have to write code, a lot of code. If an application needs to be modernized, then you'll need time, resources, and caffeine. If that sounds daunting, then you need Watson X Code Assistant, AI designed to multiply developer productivity so you can generate code quickly. Let's create a more modern foundation for business with Watson X Code Assistant. Learn more at ibm.com/codeassistant. IBM, let's create.
Finding the right news podcast can feel like dating. It seems promising until you start listening.
When you hit play on Post Reports, you'll get fascinating conversations and sometimes a little fun, too. I'm Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Azadi. Martine and I are the hosts of Post Reports. The show comes out every weekday from The Washington Post.
You can follow and listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. It'll be a match, I promise.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Now here's a highlight from Coast to Coast AM on iHeartRadio.
And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. David Edwards served as a special agent in the U.S. Army in the 1980s and 90s and is a veteran of multiple overseas combat tours. Thank you, David. He was the special agent in charge of the 1990 Panama Canal Counterterrorism Threat Assessment Report to the U.S. Congress. He is a graduate of the United States Army Intelligence School, where he studied advanced human intelligence and battlefield counterintelligence, also completing training in Jungle Operations Training Center in Panama, Central America. David, welcome, and thank you for serving, David.
Well, thank you very much, and it's a thrill to be here. Look, I've been wanting to say this, long-time listener, first-time guest.
Perfect, perfect. Well, let's make you a long-time guest.
Deal.
How did you get interested in Atlantis?
Well, I've always been interested in Atlantis, and I'm a geek, I'm a nerd. Growing up, I grew up in the 70s and 80s, and just like everyone else, I read the books. I read, Eric Von Daniken, Fingerprints of the Gods, and I watched all the TV shows. And then Atlantis kind of faded away, and about a year ago, I had listened to all the Coast to Coast AMs that I could. I, of course, had my subscription, and I listened to the past shows, but I was kind of out of content, so I was flipping around on YouTube. And there's a channel called Bright Insight with this guy, Jimmy Corsetti. And in 2018, he claimed that this place in West Africa called the Rishat Structure, he thought it looked a lot like Atlantis. And I was intrigued by it, so I decided to independently verify it, which kind of resulted in the book.
Is it a landmass in West Africa, or is it an island? What might it be?
Well, it looks like it's a volcanic dome. But it looks like Atlantis. So when you look at it, and it's in a country called Mauritania, and it looks like it has the center island, and then it has the rings of alternating rings of land and water. And at the time period that we're talking about with Atlantis, which we can get into, it would have been a very wet environment. And it matches, if you read Plato literally as a primary source, it matches a lot. It matches specifically just about everything he said. Now, we have some challenges with Atlantis because, we've all heard everything, which is a challenge for us. Atlantis has kind of been beaten to death. So it's hard sometimes to kind of push all what I call the secondary sources aside. The secondary sources would be people like you and me who are smart and who have read Plato and have an opinion about it. But Plato is our primary source for Atlantis. So we had to go back and start there, and that's where the book starts.
And why so many people thought Plato was out there in the Atlantic Ocean? Because of the name Atlantis?
No, so there's a line where he says that it was directly outside the Pillars of Heracles, which we know as the Strait of Gibraltar. And we live in a Google Maps world where I think people think they hear that word, you know, directly, and they want that to mean straight west. So they try and come up with reasons why maybe there was a large continent that disappeared in the middle of the Atlantic. You know, what I wanted to do with this is I wanted to come up with kind of a grand unifying theory of Atlantis that embraces all of the other places that people have found that have interesting things, because I think there's a narrative there that fits. But I also wanted an answer to it that didn't contradict. You know, so many times when we talk about Atlantis in this space, we say things like, well, the mainstream academics have it wrong, or we have to change this and this mm-hmm. about history. And I think that this location in Mauritania solves for all of that and provides an answer that not only matches Plato, like 99%, which I detail in the book, but also unifies all those other places that we think it is. And I think there's traces of those places in the dialogues that we can talk about.
Are there any remnants, David, of high technology out there?
Well, so George, we got to walk through this a little bit. The idea of high technology, let's talk about what that means really as we start to build the case for Atlantis actually is and what it actually was.
Okay.
So we're talking about 9600 BCE, and we can talk about how we get to that date. But that date's really interesting for a lot of reasons. It's in the middle of what we call the pre-pottery Neolithic, which Neolithic just means New Stone Age. And you had the Mesolithic and the Paleolithic, which is the Middle and Old Stone Age. I don't come up with these names. Someone else did. But this time period is in the middle of what they call the Neolithic Revolution. And what's revolutionary about it is in about 10,000 BCE, so about 400 years before we think when Plato tells us Atlantis was destroyed, we see the beginnings of the transformation of hunter-gatherers from, you know, dragging each other around by their hair and eating dino bones to agriculture. And so we start to see agriculture all around the Mediterranean. Here, we see that also. And agriculture is the ability to grow things, but also the ability to control water flow. So when we're talking about advanced, I think we're talking about advanced from a 9600 BCE standpoint. What Plato tells us is the Atlanteans were good at two things. They were good at agriculture, and they were good at organizing themselves, which he really liked. That's one of the things Plato did, was try and figure out if the society he lived in had the best form of government or if there were better forms. And you know, he spent a lot of time on that. He didn't spend a lot of time on Atlantis, but whenever he found an example he thought he liked, whether it was a metaphor or whether it was something he thought was real, he would use that and then compare and contrast it to what he knew of the world that he lived in. So when we say advanced, we're talking about advanced for a Stone Age culture, mm-hmm. and we're talking about the invention and innovation around agriculture.
So it's not that they had spaceships and computers.
You know, I tell people when I talk about this, I say I'm like the Grinch that stole Christmas. you know, we all stare at that Christmas present, right? When we were kids, and the weeks leading up to it, it could be anything. And then Christmas comes, and we open it, and it's tube socks. Oh, okay, well, we need tube socks. We got to.
Yeah, or a sweater or something like that.
Or a sweater. Yeah, I live in Florida. But I don't think of sweaters, but yeah, sweaters. You Northerners would wear a sweater. But yeah, but so it's something very practical and something that makes sense. And that's what we're looking at. Now, that doesn't mean that they weren't good at things that have been lost, because, you know, obviously a lot of information has been lost. But my job was to take an engineering approach and do this in a very visible, scientific way that other people can look at and kind of just stick to the physical facts and the things we know about history. So I don't really get into whether there were death ray crystals or nuclear submarines. Plato doesn't mention those. Oh, but I don't know anything about that. All I know is, given the history we have, and I decided to treat Plato as history, which is the same way that Henrik Schliemann found Troy, by the way. He treated the Iliad as history. When you do that and look at the geography it, with a realistic eye and also with the premise that we have to be able to see it and understand it. It can't be that you know, I have to tell you why this is Atlantis. Anyone should be able to look at it. They should be able to look at the confirmations that I've done. They should be able to look at the other documents, and they should be able to reach their own conclusion, whether it supports my conclusion, which it will, I think, or not. But we have to do this for real. And that's when I took this on. That's what I wanted to do. I wanted to get past this one-hour documentary where the first half hour is, you know, we see pretty people going on a travel log of nice places talking about Atlantis. And the second half is them speculating on, we have to change this, or Plato got this wrong, maybe it's 900 years. And it kind of ends with kind of open speculation. It could be one of these three places, and if anyone will give us more money, we'll go look harder. And so that's not what my book is at all. My book, that's why I call it definitive. And when you go through it all, when you decompose Plato down to literally what he's saying, and you make the rule that you can't dismiss any of it, and we can't assume he was an idiot, and, you know, he didn't get something wrong, and then you literally apply it, you start to build this overwhelming circumstantial case that we found it. And I believe that's been done. I believe that's what the book does.
We're talking with David Edward. His book is called Atlantis Solved. How did you come up with, or how did the number 9500 BC come up?
Well, so 9600 BCE, and this is kind of a, I'm not the first to do this math, but basically we look at Solon, who was around 600 BCE, and he was a Greek politician. This was before the Greek classical period, and arguably Solon could be the person that kind of thought democracy might be something that was interesting to try. So as he was figuring out what it meant to be a politician and all that, he went to Egypt. Because Egypt is a storied civilization. It's a good place to go to see how they do things. And they went over lots of stuff. One of the things that they went over was their ancient history, which is where he got the story of Atlantis from. And it's actually something I want to dispel, you know, when we talk about that. And then the Egyptian priest told him that this happened 9,000 years before they're telling him. So you take 600 BCE, you add 9,000 years to it, you get 9,600 BCE. Uh-huh. And that's kind of a magical date. There's lots of things we can go over that align to that date.
The 2024 presidential campaign features two candidates who are very well known to Americans. And yet, there's complexity at every turn. Criminal trials for one of those candidates. Young voters who are angry. The Campaign Moment podcast from The Washington Post gives you what matters. I'm Aaron Blake, and I'm covering my 10th election cycle. My colleagues and I have insights that you won't find anywhere else. So follow the Campaign Moment right now, wherever you're listening.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Now, what happened to Atlantis, David? We've heard all kinds of stories. What did your investigation show?
You know, we have tools today that we didn't even have 10 years ago. Any of us now can be satellite archaeologists, and we can go on Google Earth, and we can see images with either 30-meter or 10-meter resolution, which is really good resolution. When you look at the JPL pictures, especially when they are to the east of where this Rishat structure is in Mauritania, you can see the runoff of water, massive runoff of water from this location to the sea. Also, Mauritania exports hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of salt every year. And when you get deeper into Central Africa, Mali, some of those other places, Chad, there's salt everywhere. Well, all salt is sodium chloride, and all sodium chloride comes from the sea. So we know that those places were underwater. When you add all that together, you look at the visual evidence, it looks like a tsunami. Now, the source of the tsunami, I don't know. I know lots of things were going on at this time period that we can talk about. It's been speculated maybe it was a comet impact, maybe it was an earthquake, because we're dealing with the Atlantic Ridge, which is very thin and could shift. What we do know is 9600 BCE is the end of the Lesser Dryas period, which is basically the end of the last ice age. And we have the a dryas, by the way, is a flowering plant that grows well in higher elevations and cold. So when we go dig stuff up, we can see how many dryases there were, and we get a feel for what the temperature was. And at 9600 BCE, something happens, and the temperature rises 40 or 50 degrees Fahrenheit in about a year. Now, it wasn't rising seawater, but that's shifting the weight around the Atlantic Ridge, and it'd be very natural for there to be an earthquake. So either an earthquake or a comet impact or something, but I don't know. Well, I can see the results of it very clearly, which is it was water. So water from the sea hit this thing. Now, supposedly, it was an active volcano. So you dump seawater into a volcano, bad things happen.
Now, the flood of Noah was about 4500 BC, right?
Arguably.
So I would not think it had anything to do with this, or what do you think?
No, we're back. I think 9600 BCE is pretty well
established.
It's pretty well established. And you get into later floods, and you get into all of those things. Plato doesn't talk about those. So I am literally taking Plato as history and working my way out from that. I don't try and compare some of the mythology, although we can certainly talk about some of the mythology. And I don't really try and marry it up to things that happened later, because Atlantis at that point was gone. So when it comes from an Atlantis standpoint, it's that 9600 date.
What do you think, David, happened to the people who occupied that region?
Well, Plato tells us they all died. Now, with that, this is a localized event, and what it looks like, the people of Atlantis, Plato tells us that they had conquered Libya up to Egypt, and they had conquered parts of Europe around the Mediterranean to the north. So we know that we have Atlanteans in Libya, in Egypt, and in Europe, which aligns to some of those other places that we can talk about that people like. People like Spain, they like Santorini, they like stuff like that. But when I did this, I said, I have to find corroboration. So to answer your question, I found two corroborating sources, primary sources. And a primary source is, the original, the origin of the information, not people reading it and talking about it. And there's this fellow named Herodotus, and he wrote before Plato, about 100 years before Plato, and he died right about the time Plato was born. And Herodotus was really the first person in Western society that tried to write down history. And he wrote this thing called The Histories. And the first third of the book is just kind of did a brain dump, like a travelogue of everything that the Greeks knew about the world and what everything was called and who everybody was. And then the second two thirds is he wrote down what was going on, the war with the Persians, all that stuff. In that first third, he says, if you go to Egypt and then you go west for 10 days, you run into these people that call themselves the Atlanteans. Then if you go 10 days more, you run into more people that call themselves the Atlanteans. Hmm. And that pattern follows all the way to the Atlas Mountains. And that name Atlas is important because those are in Morocco. And Atlas was the king of Atlantis. So we have the name of those mountains. But then Herodotus tells us these people are weird. And he doesn't talk about them a lot. He talks about them two different paragraphs right on top of each other. He says that they lived on top of salt piles. that they would tell you their name, but they wouldn't let you write it down. They refused to record their history. They didn't dream, whatever that means.
Strange.
And they were vegetarians, and they spent their days cursing at the sun. Okay, yeah. So we have a historical primary source that tells us where the Atlanteans ended up. They ended up north, up on the Mediterranean coast of Libya, which is exactly where you would end up if the city was where this Rishat structure was, and it was wiped out by some type of flood event.
Now, the water has obviously receded. Were there any remnants of structure or anything like that left?
So we found whales. So we have non-fossilized whales from the whale bones from the time period. So we know that the ocean made it that far. When it comes to what's physically there, it's all bedrock at this point. But there's one of the guys I work with. His name is David Hansen, and he was there last year. And I'm actually funding an expedition. He's going back next month. We found two locations. This is super interesting because we're not going to find buildings. It's not like Egypt, where they built with, you know, massive 300-ton stones.
Right, exactly. No huge pyramids or anything out there.
I think those were built because of this, because people were like, you know, we need to build something to last. but Atlantis was nice. But what we're looking for is the agriculture. And we have found two spots where Plato tells us that they had 60,000 10 stadia by 10 stadia farms on this giant plain. The plain was 3,000 stadia by 2,000 stadia by 3,000 by 2,000. So one question, what's a stadia, right? We got to answer that. And this was written during the lifetime of Alexander, so we're using the Alexandrian measure, which is what Plato would have been talking in, which is 607 feet. So a 10 by 10 stadia farm would be about a mile, about 6,000 by 6,000 feet, just a hair over a mile. We find massive canals in what I think is proto-terrace farming, about 10 miles to the north, which is where the northern mountain ridge is, north of the Rishat structure. And then we find it again about 20 miles to the south down what would have been the waterway. And these are big. These are tens of miles across with canals that run for, you know, dozens of miles and then head under the sand. And they're covered by something called an evaporite. And we're lucky. We're going to get lucky on this, George, because what an evaporite is like I mentioned, all this salt. When the water, you know, doesn't all drain off, some of it just evaporates and it leaves the salt.
Right.
But then it went from what was a green environment. Like I live in Florida, so it was like Florida. It rained a lot. It was fertile, all that, and it turned into the Sahara Desert that we know today. So that salt sits there, and if it's exposed to the sun over hundreds of years, it bakes, it cooks, and it becomes like a rock. And we found these fields, especially the ones to the north, the one that's 10 miles to the north. All these canals are covered with about a foot of evaporites.
Wow.
So it's going to preserve the earthwork. Now, there's a lot of sand over, but there's areas that are open. I've had a geologist work with me, and that person is also a geochemist. So we're going to collect some of the samples, but they're like 80% sure, you know, none of these guys will commit to anything until they physically see it. But it looks like salt evaporate. So we're gonna have the agriculture piece that's gonna marry up to what we're told about Atlantis, and that's gonna be the piece that, because everyone wants to see something, just like your question. Everyone wants to see a building or a flag something that says Atlantis, and we have it. It's gonna be the agriculture and the proto-terrace farming that leads us there. And I'll just mention the Atlas Mountains, about 200 miles to the north. Is there's lots of ancient terrace farming. So again, if the Atlanteans were wiped out and pushed up there, you see remnants of their technology, their advancement, continue on in the Atlas Mountains.
Listen to more Coast to Coast AM every weeknight at 1 a.m. Eastern and go to coasttocoastam.com for more.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350 plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s. Dance away with hip hop beats and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.